Welcome. It's an honor to have the folks that we have with us tonight. You're in for a great night. We have some really, really cool people that are part of the RV story. We wanted to make sure we did it justice on the anniversary here or anniversary year. Our MC tonight is someone who I'm very proud and lucky to call a friend, someone I'm sure you all have read his articles, probably spent time with him here at Oshkosh. He himself has built multiple aircraft, including two RVs. And also, he has sent more men into space than any other flight director at NASA. So without further ado, let's give a warm EA welcome to Paul Dye.
50 years ago, I was a 13-year-old kid putting my hands on the controls of a Cessna for the very first time. And there was this young guy in Oregon starting a company that has just exploded experimental aviation. It's just amazing. The rest, as they say, is history. So let's meet a few folks that we'd like to have talk about Vans Aircraft at Firstie. First, a builder. David Porter is from Martinsburg, West Virginia. He's the former president of EAA Chapter 1071. David finished an RV-7 in 2017 that Vans Aircraft designated as the 10,000th kit to take to the skies. Since that time, he's become a repeat offender by finishing an RV-4 last year. Let's welcome David. David, you want to come out? Next, we've got someone with a hair's width understanding of just how an RV flies and how it can be flown to the very edge in airshow performances. Ken Reeders from Cincinnati, Ohio. He's been flying for 34 years as a commercial airline pilot, flight instructor, and lead pilot for Redline Airshows, flying the RV-8. In the last 10 years, Ken has flown airshows all over North and Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean. He's the only RV to have flown formation with the U.S. Navy Blue Angels. Ken is also a repeat offender, currently building his fifth RV-8. Welcome, Ken. Come on out here. Now it's time for the company men, right? Let's start with Greg Hughes. Greg is the vice president and COO at Vans. He joined the company in 2018 and has been a general aviation pilot since 2009. He's been straining his neck, looking up in the sky to find the source of airplane noises since before he can remember. Greg, welcome to the stage. We're moving up the food chain. I'd like to introduce the current man at the top of the heap at Vans, Ryan Johnson. Ryan is president, chief technology officer, and chief engineer of Vans Aircraft. He joined the company as an engineering intern in 1998. As Dick says, he doesn't know any better. Soon after joining Vans, he built his own RV. He's been involved in the design and development of the last 7 models of RV aircraft. Ryan, join us out here and take your seat. And finally, the man you've been waiting for, the man who in this crowd needs almost no further introduction, but since he went to the effort to write one, we'll use it anyway. Dick Van Grinsven has been interested in flying as long as he can remember and was always building balsa model planes while growing up on a farm in Western Oregon. I just flew over that farm last week. It's really neat. He was able to learn to fly at age 16, eventually earning licenses up through airline transport pilot, along with earning an engineering degree. I find it interesting that he listed the pilot certificate first and the engineering degree second. Soon after college, he began designing and building airplanes and formally began Vans Aircraft in 1973 with his introduction of the RV-3 kit plane. Let's give a big hand for the man who started it all, who gave the company his name, and who created the most popular line of home-built aircraft kits in history, Dick Van Grinsven. Come on out, Dick. All right.
I can't really.
So thanks, everyone. To get started here tonight, I'd like Van to give us a brief history of the company.
Okay, it was mentioned that I grew up on a farm in Western Oregon. Kind of pictured here, a little hard to outline it, but kind of like to define farming a little bit. I think many people have a misconception. This was a small family farm in the old tradition of a little of this and a little of that. Animals, primarily a small farm, we needed to raise vegetable crops, highly labor-intensive stuff to get enough income from a small acreage, 45 acres. It's hardly considered a hobby farm anymore, but people were eking out livings on that. So as I said, labor-intensive crops like beans and corn and cauliflower, strawberries, and require a lot of labor. A lot of the labor is provided by child labor, if you will.
So, and you were the child.
We were the child. I was one of the children, the second oldest of a family that eventually numbered eight. So we learned to work at an early age, and we did what we could. So much, as I said, was labor-intensive before farming evolved the way it is now, with much more mechanization. So, I mean, if there are weeds, you didn't spray them with herbicide. You chopped them out with a hoe. Irrigation were not the big circles that irrigated half section at a time. There were pipes and sprinklers that you had to move by hand. So anyway, bottom line is we learned to work at an early age. Usually started pretty regular all summer work at about age eight. A lot of people have trouble identifying with that now. You're big enough to do it. It's part of what sustains the family, so you do it. We usually had spending money, but we did not get paid for every little thing we did. Again, that was farm life at that time. Learned a lot from that. You know, the value of hard work, the fact that you don't always get instant rewards. You're a part of a team. We always had the realization that we were helping to support the family, not that the wage earner went off somewhere, returned at the end of 2 weeks with a paycheck. You know, it was kind of a different upbringing than most people have now. Just how relevant that is, I don't know. Well, one other thing that I learned in the process was there's probably an easier way to make a living. One of the things that was in our childhood that was fascinated us, I mentioned in the introduction, always interested in aviation. One thing that separated my father from most other, back in the mid-30s, he had learned to fly, despite not having any money. And it's pictured here along with American Eaglet that he learned to fly in. And he would tell stories of those days, and we were fascinated with that. He not just learned to fly, but it seemed like at least the stories made something special. His instructor was an early pilot in the area who'd learned to fly from Tex Rankin, no less.
Wow.
One of his fellow students later became a well-known airshow pilot in the post-war years. I mean, this is fascinating stuff for a young kid on a farm. The person that ran the airstrip, a man named Les Long, designed his own airplanes and his own engine. So, I mean, we hung on to that. You know, as time went on, these were heroes, these were role models. As time went on, in that my father was not active in flying because he'd run out of money way back when, and with the family and all, it didn't really fit, but as my older brother and I got old enough to think about flying, Jerry paved the way for me on a lot of that by getting his soloing just after 16 and getting a private license sure. Soon after 17. And Dad had always been interested and supportive, so there's a picture of the farm now with a 650-foot airstrip on it. He bought this old, eight-year-old,
wow.
Old J3 Cub, put things in perspective. And I learned to fly in that airplane. My brother would fly me down to the airport where the instructor was and take instruction as I was 15 plus and was able to solo soon after 16. So it made flying affordable, and with the airplane in the backyard, couldn't afford to fly every day, but I learned that flying was accessible, it could be much more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Later, after a short time, we sold it and bought this Taylor craft, which was much faster. Even then, a J3 was considered slow. One of the things that we repainted some of the Taylor craft because, hey, we were teenagers. You had to have a little flash, the checkerboard
sure.
And all that.
Yep.
But it didn't have wheel fairings, and a set of used wheel fairings was $40.
Wow.
And I figured I could mold my own out of fiberglass, which I did. Probably cost more than $40. But I got an FAA approval on it. And during my college years, I actually manufactured some of these for minimal side income. So I really got started in business even before Vans Sure. Aircraft. One of the other things, though, as I was always interested in home-built aircraft, because there was that connection from Long's Airport, where Dad had learned to fly way back when. And as the EAA started to develop and more was publicized and so on about home builds, I started to reach out and meet people about the time I was in college. Man pictured here is one that I became a friend with. It was George Bogardis.
Oh yeah.
Who pictured here with his airplane, which was really an evolution of one of the last Long designs, so back close to home again. Flew to Washington, D.C. in 1947, convinced the CAA that they should permit licensing of amateur-built airplanes. So that was the beginning of amateur-built experimental airplanes. George remained a friend for the rest of his life, and the interesting thing is, I mentioned before, Mr. Les Long, who we idolized for being an airplane designer, etc., but unbeknownst to me earlier, he was really an advocate for home-built airplanes. He wrote a lot in Popular Aviation, which became Flying Magazine, and had helped start a couple of fledgling home-built organizations that during the 30s didn't. But later they'd form the Oregon Airmen's Association, which became the American Airmen's Association, which with Bogardis, after Les's death, took over and went to Washington. So not only was the little local airport fascinating in other ways, it was almost the home of experimental aviation, sure. 2 miles down the road.
Right.
Anyway, enough of that. Let's see where. Well, again, that ties into Les Long, who sure. was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I forget what year it may say there. But once I got out of college and had gone through the ROTC program, came out as an Air Force Second Lieutenant, not on flying status because of a minor vision thing, finally had an opportunity to get involved with home-built airplane. So I bought this Stitz Playboy, which did not perform as well as it, you know, looks racy, but was not that great. Realized that hopefully could do better. So I soon acquired a dismantled airframe for another Playboy, pretty available at the time, with the idea of rebuilding it and bigger engine, getting more performance. At the time I was living on Kinshel Air Force Base in northern Michigan, didn't really have any facilities. A couple pictures there showed the airplane out in the long winter snow, etc. But I got it finished in late 63, flew it. It obviously looked a lot different after I finished it than before. Mm-hmm. Flew quite well because it had 125 horse Lycoming ground power unit engine. Quite a bit for an airframe of that size.
Sure.
So after my 3-year tour in the Air Force, I came back to Oregon, and within a year or so, I designed a set of replacement wings. Very similar in size and everything, except that they were all aluminum, full cantilever. Put a different landing gear on, reduced quite a bit of weight with the flap wing. It's just a vastly improved airplane. Improved enough that I could fly it off of a renovated farm strip again.
Sure.
It was always 650 feet long. So that again helped give me a foundation in the need for a practical airplane or something that had more utility. I had that airplane for about 3 years, flew it a lot, including a couple trips to Rockford, Illinois, which was the
sure.
EAA fly-in site at the time. Some airline pilot in Texas wanted it enough made me an offer I couldn't refuse, if we use the term. And I knew I could do better because it was a hybrid rebuilt airplane. So I started then designing and building the RV-3. I showed the barn there because I fashioned a workshop in the upstairs of the barn, which wasn't being used. And you see a couple pictures of some of the airframe coming together. Unfortunately, don't have a real good photographic record of that. Ended up as the RV-3 and was able to fly it also off of the short farm strip. Early mentioned, I think, the first showing at Oshkosh in 1972, and there was a lot of interest in the airplane.
Sure.
I'd entertained the idea of trying to sell plans and parts and stuff for it. Kits, as we now know them, didn't really exist then. It was so many people just building from plans, and I thought I had a heads up on that because I had molded fiberglass parts and other things as well. One is I started business and just working out of the farm shop and then a one-car garage in our duplex. After a little while, people wanted more complete kit, so I had to try and get better facilities. The shop pictured here was really our first dedicated shop along with the house in near Reedville, Oregon. And that's a later picture. The house in the background didn't exist at the time. It was a rather small shop, but initially it was a one-person business.
Sure.
That's all I really had hoped to gain from it, except that there was more work than one person could handle. Another person was available at that time, and that was my wife. She helped, willingly or otherwise, on things. Probably at times really wondered what she got into with the two words, I do.
Yeah.
But she endured. As of October 4th, it'll be 49 years.
49.
August 4th, I'm sorry.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Thanks a lot. I suppose maybe I didn't know what I was getting into either, but it was my idea. So she was very helpful in addition to her full-time work as an RN at the local hospital. So again, the better half for sure. Not too long after I started with the RV-3 that people wanted a two-seat. I always felt that if we're really going to get the ultimate performance, the single seat is kind of necessary. A two-seat become bigger and more cumbersome. But people were asking for that, so I started designing and developing that in the late 70s, but along with all of the demands of kit production and so on. Didn't fly it until 79, and wasn't able to start offering any kits until about 1981. Then we expanded beyond the shop we had. We had maybe three employees at the time. We got some property out near North Plains, Oregon, put up a big 5,000 square foot shop.
Yeah.
It was on a residential airport. Built a house there. We still live there. Mm-hmm. So through the 80s, that was our production facility. People are never happy. We give them a very good two-point airplane. But now we want a side-by-side. Most people trained in side-by-side. Passengers prefer side-by-side. I had reason to think that I was going to lose performance with that configuration, so kind of hesitated and finally gave in and said, well, if it's going to be slow, we might as well make it wide enough to make it comfortable. So it obviously then led to a better utilitarian airplane, the RV-6. Well, yeah, it outsold everything, and we outgrew the shop. While we were still there in the small shop on Sunset Airport, we also developed our first Tri-Gear, the 6A. Sure. We were able to acquire a building in beautiful downtown North Plains, just a mile or so from where our strip was. And the building there, 16,000 square feet,
wow.
Twice what we could possibly imagine
ever using.
Needing.
Right.
Within a few years, we had to erect the building out back to expand into. And By the late 90s, we had also leased another couple of other buildings in town, and thanks to all of you, we just kept growing. During that time, mid-90s, we developed the RV8. RV8 had lost popularity to the side-by-side RV6, but I felt that if we could incorporate enough luxurious features, whatever, cabin space, et cetera, in a tandem, that there people would still like it. So we developed the 8, and fortunately, my intuition was right, and there was a good market for it, followed by the 8A. And then we also altered, say, the basic RV6 concept into the RV9, which had longer wings and was meant more as a entry-level airplane, maybe a little less demanding than sportier models that we had. But as I already mentioned, we're outgrowing our expensive facilities.
Right.
We were able to buy property on the Aurora Airport, which is south of Portland, put up the building as shown in the lower right there, kind of unfinished form in late 1999, 2000, moved in, and have been there ever since. It has served us quite well. Until recently, despite all of Ryan's talent, we had to find some additional space.
Sure.
Couldn't cram any more in. So that pretty well brings us up to date, other than that shortly after moving to Aurora, we came out with the RV7. Which really initially was going to be an upgraded RV6. But one of the primary differences was that during this time we had improved our manufacturing technology to getting into the pre-punched, etc. And really the airplane, was enough different that we decided to have a separate designation to avoid confusion with a very similar appearing RV6. So we did that, Tri-Gear 7A. A couple years later, we did the RV10. People had been asking for a four-place for years, but we knew it was going to be, particularly with the earlier technology, it would have been a big project. As the kit technology improved, we decided that even for the bigger airframe, it would still be an acceptable challenge for a home builder. So I think we test flew that in 2003, got it on the market maybe in 2005, and it has definitely proven to be popular.
Absolutely.
Since then, only a few years later, I think, was it 2005, we test flew the RV12. The light sport category had been created. We were busy with other things, so we didn't really get on the ground floor. So we've got that flying as a kit airplane, even though we had it certified light sport so that we could manufacture it if the market seemed to be there. Beyond that, the RV14, when did we first fly that?
2012, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a few years before we, and the 14, one of the impetus for that was that people loved the RV10 and the space and field of view and all of that. And we said, but they didn't all want a four place. We didn't really. So we thought if we can evolve the two seat side by side to include some of these features that people obviously wanted, so that was really the basis for the 14, kind of. More of this, more of that, more
right.
Baggage, more power, more fuel, everybody wants more.
How'd that Cessna sneak in there?
I think everybody knows that in recent years there's definitely been a lot of interest shown, a lot of development of what would be called a backcountry airplane, more of a utility, sometime off airport, small airport airplane. And we've finally got around to the point of having enough time to work on that, and announced last year that we were developing the RV-15 that was going to be backcountry capable high wing. That's all you knew, right?
Right, that's all we knew.
Control stick.
People were trying to bribe us and whatever.
Yep.
No, Ryan never gave any more information.
Nope.
But anyway, the airplane we test flew about a month ago, right?
Right, in June, yes.
And got the initial phase one testing done and brought it here and announced it as it showed to the world as of 10 o'clock this morning. And there have been several people come by to look at it.
One or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed a small trickle. Yeah.
But anyway, that kind of brings us up to date. So,
very good.
That probably took more than 10 minutes. So,
yeah, well, that's okay, but it was fascinating.
But you didn't have a stage hook here to
Okay, well, thanks for the history. We're bringing us up to date. Before we go on any further, there's a little old company from Pennsylvania, I believe, that believe it or not, has been around since before vans was the thing. They build engines. Well, Van, what was it? We were at your house the other day, and you were talking about why you like Lycoming.
Well, basically, we used the Lycoming because they made engines that of the horsepower and the size and weight and so on that best suited our design.
Yep.
And we've been challenged over the years, people saying, oh, they're married to Lycoming and this and that, and they wouldn't consider anything else. I guess the answer I gave you was that somebody else preferred the Lycoming. I mean, that was Continental Motors. They made a copy of it.
Yeah, it's, so, you know, the Lycomings are so good that even Continental builds them.
I rest my case.
There you go. All right. So I'd like to introduce Shannon Massey and a team. Shannon is the Senior Vice President from Lycoming Engines to make a little presentation. Shannon, and you want to come out here?
Absolutely. Well, I can only say you talked about
TV. You want to hold this?
You talked about the inspiration of what it was growing up and continuing innovations. And that's absolutely what we value of being a partner and working with Vans Aircraft. So Lycoming for over 30 years has been a part of Vans. We continue to look forward to the future with more. And we want to say thank you and congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I might add to that that up until the mid-90s or whatever, the engine manufacturers were hesitant to sell to kit companies because we had kind of airplanes were an unknown commodity. You didn't want your engine necessarily to be a part of a bad package. And we were one of the first to be granted an OEM agreement with Lycoming. And we appreciate that. We appreciate your confidence, and it's worked. So
we appreciate you, and that's what it's about: innovation and providing great experiences.
I think we've sold a few dozen engines.
One or two, yeah. I got several of them at home. That's great. There you go.
Thank you very much for coming out.
We appreciate that. Okay, so we've had Van speak for a while, so he needs to take a break, but you can do it right there. Let's continue. Ken, you've spent a number of years now flying RVs right on the edge in air shows. What is it about the RV that makes it just such a great airplane to fly? I'm not going to try and answer that. I want you to answer that.
Yeah, well, you know, I look at I'm building my fifth RV-8. I've built only the RV-8. But I've helped out other builders on other airplanes. But I call it my magic carpet. It does everything extremely well. Maybe not first place in any category, all categories, but it's second place in everything. You know, I said this a few years ago. You know, I've flown all over this part of the world in it. You know, all the way up to Alaska and Caribbean and down into Central America and everything. And I could do this in such an efficient machine. Quite honestly, it's changed my life. Oddly, to say it like that, but I started building the first one in 1997. And the RV-8, I filled out the form for the RV-4, and then the RV-8 came along. Buddy said, hey, they just introduced this. You should wait. And I ordered one of the first kits. I was one of the first, I think 25, I was told, in the country flying. And I was flying out of airports, and everybody's looking at it going, what is that? And is it turbocharged? You know, it's just amazing to get that much performance out of that airplane. And it's good looking, right?
It is good looking, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah, and I take the airplane with the aerobatics I do and everything. I fly it right to the edge, but never beyond, which is kind of funny. I can do everything I'm doing and still keep it within the envelope of what the airplane's actually capable of. And quite honestly, I haven't modified it. A little bit more weight distribution, but that's about all I've really done. Inverted oil and smoke and everything.
Fireworks.
And fireworks, yeah, that counts too, I guess, yeah. But that is a modification,
sure.
I guess. But it's such a great platform to do this all on. I'm flying with an extra 330 now. The airplanes are more alike than they are different. All the aerobatics we do, and here's the big difference in the airplane. So I can go straight up with him. He'll go up 50 feet higher. He's got 350 horsepower, and I've got maybe 200.
What are they like to build?
Well, I'd say I'd never done anything like this before, and it was just the community around EAA and the airport that kind of showed me that it was possible. People take you under their wing. I think probably some of you building out there have experienced this. You really get a lot of friends through the EAA and home built movement, and building it at first is, one of the reasons I wanted to build a Vans aircraft is the company seemed so solid, and I had one chance at this. And I figured I wanted to make sure it was with the, you know, I wasn't taking a risk with what I was going to do. But when I got into it, it consumes you. It's a lot of fun. I work in an office environment, and I'd come home in the evenings and work, and my friends would come over the house, come over the garage, and work on it. And it really just seemed like something that I never thought I could do, but I really got into and I enjoyed. And when I finished it, I started flying. I really enjoyed flying it, but I kind of was thinking, I'd like to build another one. And that's what I eventually got into.
They're just fun. They just all consume. You come home and you want to go to work, right?
It's strange like that, but you know, it's your mind. It really gives your mind a workout. You're constantly thinking about it and solving problems. And if you like solving problems and if you like accomplishing goals, then you might want to consider buying a Vans aircraft kit.
Very good, very good. And if you're trying to consider buying a Vans aircraft, Ryan, we got this new Silver Bird sitting out there with a number one bigger than the 14 that's been selling. So I know you're going to speak a lot about it tomorrow, right? But you let the cat out of the bag today. So 5 minutes. Tell me about the 15.
5 minutes.
3 minutes, whatever you like.
So, we wanted to do something that hadn't been done before. If we were going to recreate the wheel, why do it? And we think we bring what makes an RV to the high wing market. And when I started at Vans, I never thought it would happen, Van.
He showed us the Cub he started out. That was a high wing. So
the other airplanes have such great visibility, but really it's a different mission statement. And haul a lot of gear. We want to haul that efficiently, but we want you to have fun in the airplane as well. So I know what I love about my RV. I remember when we were developing the 9, and I would fly the 9 on 115 horse. I go to the flight school and he said, you're the only person with a frown on your face. Because the same engine, but a 150, it just doesn't fly the same, you know? So what we have is the best, I believe the best control handling in this type of airplane. And we want to bring that to the high wing market. Also, you know, an RV, it just exploits just slightly each category of what makes an airplane. So we might be off the bell curve the best in everything, but with enough base hits, we'll hit a home run.
You bet.
And make an RV out of a high wing aircraft.
We really look forward to seeing what you do with it. It's going to be amazing.
Come tomorrow and...
Yep, I'm going to come tomorrow and see what you guys have to say
we'll
about
that
it.
There.
Yeah, because I don't know anything about it.
Right.
Uh-huh. Greg.
Yes, sir.
When most media folks, us media folks, think of contacting Vans, you're the first name that comes to mind. So as the face of Van's marketing effort, how do you market the most radical of all the company's designs? What are you thinking? Do you just, or do you just stand back and accept the money that folks want to throw at you?
We're talking about the 15.
We're talking about the 15.
Well, the first thing you do is you tell them a year ahead of time, and then you play with them for a while. That's the first thing. So, we were getting the question about when are you going to do a high wing airplane? Please do a high wing airplane. We beg you, do a high wing airplane. And so about a year ago, Ryan and I were talking, actually way before a year ago, we were talking about, and we did some surveys and some things kind of a little bit under the radar to determine what was it that we could do that would play in this backcountry market that would work really, really well and that people wanted. And what did they want? And a few of the things that we figured out was that just by listening and by asking, even though you may not have known that we were asking you, we found out some good stuff, some really good stuff. And Ryan and I sat in a restaurant with a napkin and took some notes.
Until they kicked us out of the restaurant.
Until they kicked us out that night, yeah. And we both got really excited.
It's either that or do the dishes. Yeah.
Right. So, Cajun, we've had a lot of good conversations over Cajun tater tots. That's,
yes.
That's our thing. So. So to answer your question, maybe.
Maybe.
Our airplanes, fundamentally, I think we all know that our airplanes market themselves, right? They're great looking, they perform really, really well. We don't need to hire a sales force because the people that build our airplanes and fly them love the airplanes. That's how I ended up at Vans. It's how a lot of people that are working at Vans that are over here and sitting right down here ended up at Vans. They built an airplane. Someone in their family has built an airplane. They were attracted, you know, it's a principle of attraction coming in, and that really shows in terms of the interaction. I really think, you know, I'm lucky that I come into sort of a self-promoting type of product and into a company. We've made changes over the last few years. There's no doubt about that. You know, we've kind of changed a little bit of the look and we've done those things, but there is a pent-up demand for this airplane, for the RB-15. I am super excited to build and fly one myself. And all I hear from everybody else is that that's the case as well.
Outstanding, outstanding. So the real question is, how much I got to give you to get myself on the top of the list?
on the top of the list?
Top of the list.
Should we have an auction?
Yeah. All right, we'll talk about that later. So something that's been very, very near and dear to, I know Greg and Dick's house, Van's heart, is getting kids started early in flying. I was given the opportunity when I was 13 to get involved with rebuilding J3 Cubs, and that started me in real aviation. It got me out of models and into full-size airplanes.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the team flight. We don't have a lot of time, but the team flight, and I want Dick to comment on that as well, and what it meant to you, how you got it started. Maybe Dick wants to start.
I was involved in starting it. I have trouble restarting this slideshow, though.
Uh-oh.
Come up with it. There.
Oh, there it goes.
That's not the one I wanted. Okay.
There we go.
There we go. Yeah, okay. As long as I can recall, I wanted to build airplanes, and when I was in school, I didn't have the opportunity. As we developed these airplanes, I always thought it would be nice to get youth projects in building, but most of our designs were a little bit challenging, particularly in the earlier days. We came out with the RV-12 and we thought, here's an airplane that we can build a teen model around. And Scott McDaniel in our proto shop had the same idea at the same time. So we got together and organized a program that became known as Team Flight. Picture here just shows a number of students in one of our early projects working on the airplane. Finished airplane, the RV-12. And a very capable airplane, an airplane that there is a good market for. So we're able to build the airplanes and resell them to buy the next kit. So it's an educational project that basically supports itself.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad model.
It's a wonderful model.
People involved like myself and other builders do the mentoring on a volunteer basis. Everybody loves it. We love working with the kids. There's a picture of one of our students several years ago, a young lady named Paige Quintana, and you notice the earring she has. Mm-hmm. We were doing some trimming on the wing root skin. Bird that page. Little curl came off. Can I have that? A few minutes later, there she was. I think it tells the story. And the airplane more nearly finished, and she's kind of giving us a ballet step or something on it there. But another young lady in a more recent class, Zoe Eisel, sort of graduated from our class in 3 years ago. Can we get those two up here if they're in the audience?
Yeah, we got Joey and Paige. Come on up here.
This is another picture of Zoe just after hearing an announcement that she'd been granted a $5,000 scholarship.
So wow.
An appropriate reaction.
That's amazing.
So you remember that.
Tell us what teen flight meant to you.
I started when I was a junior in high school. And I was in the teen flight group way after Paige. Not way after, sorry. But I remember I had no idea anything about aviation. It was kind of, all I knew was that my mom flew like as a flight attendant. But other than that, I didn't think it was even possible to start flying. And then I think when I got accepted into teen flight, the best thing about it was that I didn't even know what I was getting into, and I'm working with these mentors and working on the RB-12, and suddenly I find out later that I'm working with Mr. Van Gunsman, who owns the company. And in my head, I'm like, oh, that's just Van, he's just a normal guy. And then, but that's the great thing about this program is that you learn so much, and it's so focused on the education that you don't even realize it's magic for the young kids, especially when they start flying and they've never experienced it and probably never would have if it wasn't for these gentlemen here. So yeah, that's my experience.
Very good.
What have you done since the teen flight program?
Actually, when I was in teen flight, Mr. Hughes was actually the one who was helping us with the scholarship programs through the EAA. And I remember the one time I said I didn't think I was going to be able to start flying as a career, but he took me aside and sat me in a room and was like, did you apply for a scholarship? And I was like, yeah, I applied, but I don't even think I could fly. And then he was like, you're going to take it. We're going to get you flying. And then I was like, oh my gosh, okay. So then he really told me that I have to believe in myself. And then after that, I think that was the day that I realized as long as I work hard for it and fight for it, it was possible. So then I got my private license all the way since then. Thank you.
Very good, very good.
I got my CFI just last year. So I'm an instructor now. And and then I have a job lined up for a regional airline, but I love volunteering for my favorite thing. I'm in the 99s as well, and I'm a huge person for I'm the scholarship chairman for my local chapter. So I think Mr. Hughes really inspired me to get as much scholarship money for people who need it as much as we could. So that's what I'm doing right now. And Paige.
Very good. Paige, you haven't done anything at all after teen flight. A lot of us stand by our airplanes when we're here. What's the airplane the aircraft you're standing by here at Oshkosh?
Well, if you guys have made your way down to the pavilion, I fly the UH-60 Black Hawk. So we're parked over at the Army tent.
Black Hawk after building an RV-12. Amazing.
And one other thing I might add to that, I know you've got probably more detail, but excuse me. We had a couple of outstanding students in your class, yourself and a young man named Justin Inman. Shortly after, I believe, the airplane was finished, you were at an airport party. There was a person there that had bought an RV-12 kit, was not making any progress. Brother Jerry says, why don't you hire these kids to help build it?
That's
what happened there?
Well, one RV-12 later, he's still flying. I think he is in attendance today.
Want to stand up, Richard?
Stand up, Richard. There we go, right out here. Outstanding.
point there is, our students helped Richard build his airplane. Since then, he's been back as a mentor, teaching more kids to build airplanes. I think that's a beautiful circle.
That's outstanding. That's just, that's the way aviation is supposed to work. It's just amazing. Thank you.
I didn't
you.
Mean to cut you short. Well, please take your time.
I think you guys know the whole story. I've built a handful of other RVs. I strayed from the Vans path and I built a Rans S19. But hey, if you...
Man will forgive you.
Yeah, I know,
It's a good airplane. Yeah. I enjoy that.
It was a good build.
Yeah.
If you build a set of skis for that 15, I'll be first on the list for it. So.
There you go.
You didn't tell us where you're living now.
I fly the UH-60 Blackhawk. I'm stationed at Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks, Alaska. So I get to do a lot of really great bush flying. I'm currently flying a Cessna 140 right now and working on building that off airport time. So.
Well, that's getting you used to the high wings for the 15 that you're going to build.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very good. Well, thanks for coming up. You can
appreciate
take the head back down
Thank
and
you.
Really appreciate it. Congratulations on all you've done. Yeah, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of zero in on a few questions for these three. So I want to thank Dave and Ken for joining us here tonight, talking to us a little bit about what it was like to fly and be it as a customer. And then we're going to put the company guys on the hot seat. So thanks much.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Good.
Thank
Get
you.
Off
thank
that
you.
Way. Yeah. Yeah. So about 2 weeks ago, I went over to Van's house, and I was up in the Portland area. And we sat down and talked about some things we could share with the audience that you might find interesting. And the first thing was, so Van, what happened to the missing RV numbers exactly? You know, there's no 2 or 5 or 11 or 13. And I think that, Ryan, you might have skulked around a little bit with some pictures.
I'll let you guys talk a little bit about
Yeah, there's something. What in the world
that's
is
not,
that?
That's not much of a picture, but shortly after building the RV-1 or modifying to the RV-1, I'd always had an interest in gliders and soaring, sailplane flying. So I was going to build myself an all-wood glider. And I was kind of intrigued with the flying wing design. So I designed the RV-2 to be this flying wing glider. And I started building it. And there are some wings that, I guess that's an older picture. Ryan found those under the cobwebs in the upstairs of the barn.
Wow.
There. Yes.
I've got to admit, hanging around the RV world, I've heard that, I knew that you'd started the RV2, but I never knew that that much of it existed.
Well, I had the idea that wood was going to be much easier than aluminum.
Of course.
And it wasn't.
Yeah.
And they're big wings, 40-foot span, a lot of area.
Wow.
And with other sidelining distractions, never didn't get it finished by the time I needed to build the RV3. So it was set aside and is still aside.
Sure.
Probably for the better because I really didn't know what I was doing. So
okay.
Then the RV5 missing number was built as a kind of a chapter project back in 1975-76. And it was the outgrowth, one of our chapter members had developed the two-cylinder adaptation of a Volkswagen engine. They needed a little light airframe to fly it in. So I thought, well, we'll design this as kind of a club project within the chapter. And it's going to be real simple, and we'll build it in 6 months. Ha, ha, ha. You learn that group projects progress as an inverse proportion to the number of people involved.
Got it.
I'm a little bit off there, but if you understand mathematics.
Yep.
So it took a little longer to build, but we got it finished, and it flew reasonably well on what was probably 30 horsepower out of those two-cylinder Volkswagen. To best of my knowledge, it was the first two-cylinder Volkswagen developed.
Okay.
So I've got that distinction of being
a
test pilot thereof. It had some teething problems. Didn't really perform that well. The airplane looked strange because I had the idea of making a rotable airplane with a one-piece wing that pivoted around, really simple, supposedly.
NASA built one like that about 30 years later.
That was a little different.
Yeah, but it, you know, the scissor wing. Yeah.
And that was Steve Smith's father.
It was?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Anyway, we'll get into
yeah.
Steve Smith's another topic, a
yeah.
brilliant aerodynamicist we know. But anyway, point is that flew it a little bit and there wasn't enough interest to keep it going. The engine needed development and the developer sort of lost interest. Set it aside, reactivated it a few years later with 40 horse Rotax when that came out, and it flew much better. It was a pretty lively little airplane, but still had no real commercial potential and too busy with other things. Set it aside for many years, and just within the last couple of years, Ryan and some of the others have renovated the airplane.
Yeah, I actually got a chance engine. To go up and help on some of the renovations. And, it's interesting to work on one of your
close.
Originals.
Maybe if they don't get bogged down too many things like RV-15s, they may get it in there.
But they want their kids, man.
It was, no, it'll never go anywhere.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
But really performed pretty well. On 40 horsepower, a couple times I challenged Super Cubs. I stayed
yep.
right with a 150 horse Super Cub.
Wow, excellent.
And could outrun them handily.
Excellent.
So not a bad little airplane, but rather cramped in the cockpit and a lot of compromises.
Sure.
RV-11, more years ago than I care to admit, I was going to try and develop a motor glider. So I started building that. The same thing, it was going to be a quick project at adapting to a set of HP-18 15-meter wings that I had. And it's still unfinished. You may have seen it in my shop.
We saw it. It was farther along than I expected to
yeah.
see it.
Yep. But those are the missing numbers.
Okay, very good.
Except for the RV-13.
The 13, which was... For which Air Force was that?
I can't pronounce
it. I can't pronounce it anyways.
Greg probably could.
No.
Triskaidekaphobian.
Triskaidekaphobian Air Force. It was a stealth aircraft. Anyway, yeah, some yeah. people will get that. Yeah, yeah. So.
The bottom line is it's just not worth messing with the number.
No. Okay, so that gets the missing numbers. Another one for you, Van. As long as I've known you, and it's getting to be a fair number of years, you've made safety one of your top priorities. RVs seem to have safety levels very similar to GA production aircraft. What have you done to achieve that, and what do you credit that to?
Self-preservation.
Self-preservation, I like that, yeah.
In a way that I've flown and tested all my own airplane, or initially. Part of it, though, is just the overall configuration of the airplane so that it had a safe flying qualities, decent landing speeds, and handling qualities, so you had the controllability that more control than you needed. So it was primarily as far as the airframe is concerned, just trying to make it safe. Later on, we got more involved with basically safety advocacy. I wrote a lot of articles in the old RVator newsletter
yep.
we had published, encouraging people to follow this or that practice. And I think it was about in the mid-90s, realized that transition type training, model specific, was more necessary than we realized. Initially, I said, well, we made the airplane easy, relatively easy to fly, et cetera. You know, kind of minimal training, you're going to be okay. Well, that's not really adequate in the real world. So Mike Seeger, a local pilot who built an RV-6, was an experienced instructor, started offering type-specific training.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, he's still doing it. I think he's got approaching 20,000 hours of dual.
20,000 hours in RVs.
And many of you here, how many of you have flown with
yeah,
Mike?
Yeah, how many people have flown with Mike Seeger?
Lot.
Yeah, I include myself in that. That's pretty
so
cool.
that's part of the safety picture, and we just continue to encourage people not to do dumb modifications on the airplanes, to fly them reasonably. Sometime the airplane makes you feel like you're a better pilot than you really are.
Yeah.
You can probably identify, not critically, but
yeah.
know what I mean.
Yeah,
oh, I can do anything with this airplane.
You bet.
Not always true. But anyway, all of the above. And as close as we can track this, despite the fact that amateur-built airplanes have never achieved a safety record quite equal to factory for all kinds of reasons, all of the variables. As far as we can tell, our fleet is now pretty right near the
That's
average
outstanding.
For overall
That's outstanding.
General aviation, despite all of the other inherent.
Sure,
sure. Okay. We've been fairly successful, thanks to you folks.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
Yeah, keep flying safe. Okay, so this is kind of for all of you. RVs are known for their delightful, fun-to-fly handling qualities. How do you achieve this? What's the secret sauce? Ryan, you're the chief engineer.
We can't tell you.
You can't tell us.
Then it wouldn't be a secret anymore.
Yeah. Van, what's the secret sauce? Maybe you can tell us.
Well, from the beginning, the airplanes that we evolved our initial designs from had pretty good handling qualities. So some of it I kind of inherited. And then as we went along, the performance of the airplanes improved. I just paid close attention to what made the airplane enjoyable to fly, kind of analyzed the controls and control movement and all of this, and just gained a knowledge of it so that when we progress from one to another, we're able to identify any little variation, any little negative variation, and knew how to correct it through more experimentation. But primarily, we just put a lot of emphasis on that regardless of how nice it may look or what the performance numbers might be, if you don't enjoy being in the cockpit and flying the airplane, and if landings don't scare the bejesus out of
right,
you,
right.
you're going to fly more.
You bet.
So
you bet.
Obviously the handling qualities we recognize, and it's really been one, well, in a way the secret sauce, because it's not something you can put a number on like you can airspeed or rate of climb or
hard
whatever.
Hard to describe.
Huh?
It's hard to describe. Yeah.
It is.
Sure.
Until you
sure.
experience
it. But you know it's right when it's right.
We came yeah. up with a saying, I forget who originated it years ago. We demonstrate the airplanes. People come out to the factory, go up for a demonstration flight. We've done it here at Oshkosh, going back almost 40 years.
Yeah.
And what was described initially as the $40,000 free ride.
Right. Yep.
Because you took the free ride and you were going to spend
the money. You were going to spend the money, yeah. I've been there a couple times. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. So, Greg, marketing guy, we'll start this next one with you.
All right.
Then we'll see what Van says, and maybe Ryan will chip in. Most home builds have popular names as well as model designations. Why not the RVs? I mean, you're just selling numbers, for heaven's sake.
Well, I know there's some way before my time stories about that. There's a more recent, and before I even knew the way again, way long time ago story, I know that Ryan and I had conversations about the RV-15 and should we give it a name. We went back and forth, and at one point we actually decided on a name. We decided what it was going to be. But then fundamentally, I think we've just sort of come back to the fact that it's RV-15 is really what it is. So what RV in a number, no matter who it is, just about in general aviation now, means that it's a Vans aircraft product, that it's something you fly. It invokes a whole set of understanding ahead of time about what you can get, what you're going to expect. And so if you hear RV and there's a dash and there's a number after it, that really works really, really well.
You know what it is.
You know what you know.
Okay, but that's the answer from the guy that's only worked for the company since 2018.
That's right.
Van?
Going way back when, at one point, when I designed the RV4, I actually published a little flyer that sent out to people stating what I was working on and what they might expect. So I had named it the Toucan, which
okay.
is a bird with a big bill.
Yeah.
But Toucan, two-seat, Toucan, fly it. You know, I thought that was clever.
You have no idea how glad I am that didn't
but,
work.
yeah. But I then received a letter from somebody that says, hey, we've got that name registered already. You can't use it. So I says, and of course, he never finished the airplane or marketed it, but that's beside. So I thought, well, okay, that I didn't have any more clever left in me, so that was the end of
just
it.
Just give it a number, and it's good enough. You're an engineer, like
focus on the engineering,
heart.
Yeah.
So, one of the most amazing things about the Vans phenomenon is that not only are these great airplanes from a great company, but there's an incredible community that has grown up around them. It's just unprecedented. It's just unimagined. You know, I've often joked that I have no idea how people ever finished an airplane before the internet. I mean, and the answer is a lot of people didn't. But the completion rates nowadays are just astounding. And the truth is, the internet has really helped kit numbers expand exponentially. In the RV world, I think that we can blame one man for creating that phenomenon, a website and a community that both go by the same name. I'm talking, of course, about Doug Reeves and Vans Air Force. Doug, are you out there someplace? I want you to just stand up and say hi.
There he is.
There he is. There Doug.
Is. Yeah, Doug.
Woo. Thank you. Doug told me the other day that he has 30,000 registered members on Vans Air Force, okay? So we've got 11,000 some airplanes flying. The rest of you slackers better get going, okay? So Greg, you're the internet guru at the company. You know spooky things with computers that none of us know. Is VAF really as important as it seems, or really just a clever computer virus that has infected all of our brain cells?
It might be both.
How often do you go to VAF?
Oh, way too often. So does everybody else at work. Vans, actually, in reality, Vans Air Force is probably more important than people realize. In that the community, it's the digital meeting place, if you will. I hate to use that borrowed term. But that's really what it is, for people to be able to share information, sometimes accurate information, try to share information with each other, ideas, provide assistance to each other. They have parts they're not using, they want to sell, they can do that. But there's so many things that have happened and continue to happen on Vans Air Force. And if it wasn't for that community and that really good sort of mutually beneficial relationship between Doug's small business and our burgeoning small business, then it wouldn't be what it is today. It would be impossible for it to be what it is today.
It truly is amazing how it's just been exponential growth. And you're talking about the small businesses. Vans Aircraft has really spawned an entire industry of suppliers and subcontractors. It is just amazing how many people I visit that got their start supplying parts for RVs and the like.
Couldn't do it without them.
How did that get started, Dan?
It's hard to tell exactly, but as we got started with the kits, we needed certain things. We had very limited equipment, machinery in our own shop. And fortunately, I just knew enough people that identified with what we were doing and had the talent or the capability of doing it. So much of it was things that you couldn't really go to the local industry, the local sheet metal shop or whatever for.
Right.
And a lot of it was just very good fortune, and part of it probably ties back to the community you just referred to. The people really identified with this, and if they could help, even if they didn't see a great profit potential there. And for some of them, fortunately, it worked out. They were developed like M&W Fiberglass. I don't know how many people they have. Usher Enterprises is
sure.
There. They were there from the very beginning.
Pressed most of the parts.
Yep. So anyway, a lot of people just kind of identified with what we were doing and stepped up to help. I'm extremely fortunate and grateful for that.
It's not only a community of builders, it's a community of vendors. And I'll remind people that when we were restoring the RV1 back in 2012, we ended up with a poster, and I think it's probably got 40 companies on there. We didn't buy anything. When we needed a part, we contacted the small mom-and-pop company that could do that, and they said, of course I'm going to send you one for the RV1. And it was just incredibly outpouring of support we got of parts and supplies and things that we needed to make that airplane fly again. It was just incredible, just what an industry you've started around the country.
Again, we're very grateful because it would have been difficult to do that on our own. Ryan can talk more about it now, just the way we've kind of evolved from outsourcing to do it in shop, depending upon what the component or the product is.
Sure.
It's a constantly evolving
process. Sure.
Right, right.
Sure, sure. Ryan, I know you've worked for Van since you were a kid, right? You're still a kid as far as we're all old guys.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that he probably was already using the motto total performance. How did you understand, what do you understand total performance to mean?
Total performance, it's, of course you came up with the slogan there.
Yeah.
But it's hard to embody what an RV is in total. It's hard to describe. The control handling, I think, is key to it. It's an airplane, I think it starts at the farm strip where you started, Van, because it's a strip that people before that would have flown a very low-performance airplane off of.
Sure.
Something like a Cub. But then you want to do the same thing with the RV3. So you have that total performance. So we don't lose anything on the low end. You can still go into the small strip, yet you want it to go fast. So that speed ratio, I think it's about the honesty that is surrounding the company. There's an honesty, you know, that we have with performance numbers, but there's also an honesty as a designer on, you know, you don't search for this pie in the sky thing off the edge of the bell curve.
Right.
You say, what is really necessary in that airplane?
In that airplane.
And what I would want out of that airplane. Yeah.
How did you actually come up with total performance as your motto?
Well, I was looking for a simple way to describe it and couldn't really without going into multiple long sentences. And again, that
so
a lot of airplanes were noted for, some were noted for high speed. Ryan already covered it, and specific expletives could be used for it, I suppose. But I just wanted a simple phrase, and I was not that satisfied with it. It just didn't necessarily roll off the tongue right. But it's the best I could come up with, which basically meant a good compromise, a good balance. And, well,
it's held on for 50 years.
Yeah.
Accidental marketing genius.
Marketing genius, there you go, it's perfect. So we just got a couple minutes left and there's just a couple questions I want to ask because I know we're kind of, it's getting late and those T6s start really early in the morning, right? So I don't want to keep people too much later. So we're probably just not, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions, we'll wrap it up. And these are perfectly random, right? We're just sitting around Van's office back at his house the other week and I don't even know what most of these mean, so I'm going to ask him and let these guys tell us. Ryan, tell us the Paul Harvey story.
Van wants to know that one. it was a story about my own grandfather. He bought a truck, and it didn't have a radio, so he goes into the store, and they explain all the radios that you could buy. This is the 1980s. And he pointed to the lower left one that had a dial that went back and forth and said, does that play Paul Harvey? So some people don't even know what it is. But it comes back to what I tried to say in total performance that, you know, what do you want the airplane to do? And you can go off to this side or the other, but you'll lose what makes an airplane fun to fly if you go too far off to one side or the other. So just keep it simple.
Center spot.
Keep it simple.
Got it.
And don't add things to it.
Got it. Van, you told me something about the time you got shot down by Jimmy Doolittle.
Well,
Jimmy was kind of a hero of mine, so I want to hear this
people
one.
People have heard the name before. Well, one thing we didn't cover here, I jabbered too long on other things, but I did airshow flying for a lot of years, demonstrating my RV 3 and 4, primarily as a sales tool, in addition to a bit of an ego trip. But one of the shows I flew at regularly was the Watsonville, California fly-in. And one year, I flew my performance and landed in just hardly any reception at all. And then later, an announcer came up and he says, well, we had a celebrity that had, was going to be here at 2 o'clock, Jimmy Doolittle, and his motorcade got delayed, whatever. And he happened to show up just as you were starting to fly. So guess who got the attention? Thus, I was shot down by
Jimmy
Doolittle.
You were shot down by Jimmy Doolittle. That's a good
And I didn't even get to meet him.
So, you didn't even get to meet him? No. Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, last question, and this one is completely out of left field because I have no idea what it means. He gave me this set of notes and said, ask me about these things. There was one word, rainmakers. And it sounded like a good story, so tell me what it was.
Going back to flying from the farm.
Yeah.
And we, when we first started, we still had the J3 Cub. One Sunday morning, Dad mentioned that he was going to go trout fishing. There's a Dury Creek ran right by our and neighboring properties. So we just, Jerry and I, we just said, well, even though it's a nice sunny spring day, it's better not, it's gonna rain. Well, he went fishing, obviously we were joshing. But Jerry and I got to thinking, can we make rain? We've got this cub that'll hold, carry a bucket of water. Okay. I think you see where this is going. I was, you know, 15 years old at best, and he was slightly older. The fishing there, they were just drifting down this small creek, which is covered with trees. You can't even see it, hardly. So we had to, took off. I got a, what was about a 3-gallon bucket of water sitting in the back of the cub with the doors open, as right. most of you know. And we flew around a bit, and we found their boat, and made a pass at 200-300 feet high, whatever. Looking over the side, I lean out with a bucket of water. Even a 50-mile-an-hour wind blew more of it in my face. I looked down and watched, and you could see the, it looked like smoke almost going down, way over in the trees there, missed by it. So I still had some water left. We make another run, and same thing. It just like a miss by a mile. So we were really embarrassed. And we figured when Dad got home, oh, I mentioned he was going fishing with a friend, his friend H.J. And we're really going to get a razzing, you know, because Dad came home and he was not happy. We had scored on the second drop. And if you ever had a glass of water thrown at you, a gallon of water covers even in a 20-foot.
It sure does. It sure does.
The other thing was that Mrs. H.J. was on the boat too. So we were reprimanded, and we, you know, were very, well, apologetic, etc. But inwardly, it's like, we're pretty damn good.
No kidding. That's pretty good. I really like that one. Thank you. So I guess it's safe to say you've been fooling around with airplanes for a long, long time.
And somehow I survived.
And somehow you survived. It's quite a history. It's really amazing. With that, I think we're going to wrap it up. We kind of talked about a time limit here just because it is a late night and we're getting there. I really want to thank everybody for coming out here. Before we go, turn up the house lights just a second, if we can. I want everybody who has flown or built an RV to stand up. Van, look at what you've done. This is just incredible. Okay. And I want to do one more thing. Everybody who flew or built an RV before they graduated from high school, remain standing. Everybody else sit down. I think we're going to have a few of here. Well, maybe they've gone to bed.
Yeah.
We've got a couple. We've got a few. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you for you guys up here. Thanks for everything that Vans has done. You're an amazing company, but you're an amazing family, and I'm glad to be a part of that. Thank you all. Good night.